and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to somberly the final breakdown edition as your Golden Gopher football team beats up on the Fighting John Denvers of West Virginia in the Guaranteed Rate Bowl that has also been named the Slip and Slide for no ungodly reason as Minnesota wins in Phoenix 18-6. Felt like a game that when you look at that game score was out of the 1920s, somehow having two even numbers there in terms of 18-6. But joining us for the final time, and I can tell you from talking with the people down in Phoenix that there is not a more beloved member in the Gopher football podcast community than the smartest person I know when talking about football, and my second cousin and former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Derek Burns. Derek, I want you to know from interacting with the masses that you are incredibly beloved and people love your knowledge. So how
I appreciate that.
How big is your head now? I want to know.
Yeah. Well, I love being a fan. I like talking college football, and I know Ryan, your site and the listeners are with us in that they enjoy college football. And I'm glad, as I said before, good to see what you guys are able to do and get some exposure and excitement and, you know, and some support for the program.
All right, so let's get into this 18-6 game. I think we have to put a big disclaimer on this episode in that we're probably not going to spend as much time as you'd think on the breakdown because it's very hard to critique given the field conditions. Normally, you know, one would say, well, both teams have to play in it, but that was literally probably one of the worst field condition games I've ever seen, Ryan, and you were there to witness the whole kerfuffle take place live.
Now, hold on, let me step away from the mic so I can get up on my soapbox here because I was live there in Phoenix, so good for me. So here's the story for those of you who did not travel to Chase Field and the Phoenix area for this bowl game. It was raining the entire day in Phoenix on the 28th, and the roof was closed at the baseball stadium of the Arizona Diamondbacks for the entire duration, or at least most of it. I think they opened it momentarily during around 5 o'clock just to see if it would open. Then they immediately closed it. Well, here's what happens. 30 minutes before the game, both teams go into the locker room and they open the stadium up. It starts to absolutely pour. And it pours on this turf that had been grown for however long it had been put in there about 4 or 5 days ago. And it pours for 20 minutes and then they close it. 5 minutes before the game. Now you're thinking to yourself, why in the world would they open it? Well, number one, I'd like to use some explicit language, but I know that we have some younger ears listening to this. And here's what I'll say. They're a bunch of morons. Whoever made the decision at the Guaranteed Rate Bowl. So they had four paratroopers come in the dark and in the rain to land on the field. Okay. Not sure why they couldn't have called an audible there. And then they also had pyrotechnics for the national anthem. So they had fireworks go off, and they probably needed the stadium to be open for that to happen. But because they made the idiotic decision to open the stadium up for 20 to 25 minutes before the game, and if you were there, I know you were heading for the concourse because it was pouring. So, yeah, 5 minutes before the game starts, they shut it. And then you watch a slip and slide where Tanner Morgan is trying to go play action, falls down. Michael Brown Stevens tries to make a break out of his cut, falls down, interception. Ty Thomas tries to put his foot in the ground and plant, he falls down. It is arguably the most idiotic thing, an inexplicable, inexcusable, you name your Dan Barrero adjective. I will probably agree with you, but I cannot wrap my hand just. And I wrote about it after the game on Gopher Illustrated that it was just inexcusable because you're in Phoenix. You're in an indoor stadium if you want it to be. And the fact that the people at the Guaranteed Rate Bowl couldn't figure out and look at a radar like any of us can in our cellular devices and say, oh, it looks like it's raining pretty good. Probably shouldn't open up the stadium so that the slick field gets even slicker. Mind-boggling to me, Luke. Absolutely mind-boggling. I am just throwing the proverbial L at whoever made that decision, the Guaranteed Rate Bowl. Whoever made that Guaranteed Rate Bowl should absolutely not have a job. Absolutely not. It was stupid.
Here's the interesting thing that I'd like to point out, you know, all these bowls are have sponsorships. And I wonder if this reflects poorly on someone like Guaranteed Rate as a brand, given the field conditions were so bad and, you know, all these negative connotations and, you know, all the social media interaction and the sentiment you can derive from that. I think that would be interesting to quantify. I don't know if anybody could, but, you know, Derek, you brought up a good point when we were chatting recently. You know, this was played at a baseball stadium, which could have actually played into the fact that, you know, the roof was opened and, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, yeah, I just wondered out loud. Every stadium, every team has a director of game day operations, not a facilities person, so to speak, but someone who is in charge of things like, what are we going to do for the national anthem? What is the on-field contest going to be after the first quarter? There's a person whose job it is to orchestrate all of that. And my guess is that it was that person's call, whether or not to open the roof or to let the pregame, you know, festivities that Ryan mentioned happen or not. And being that this was played at a baseball stadium and it's a bowl game, I don't know who that person would be in this case. So perhaps that was a factor. If it was someone who's not used to operating a football game or making those calls for a football game and taking things like field conditions into consideration. And either way, I think the frustrating thing is obviously it was avoidable. You know, in football, you deal with all different kinds of weather conditions, but this was clearly avoidable. And as a player, this stuff drives you nuts because as a player, you put in all this time to practice and there's a lot of money involved in a bowl game, as you mentioned, Luke, with the sponsorships. And, you know, you have players and coaches and teams and traveling and charter flights and all that money and everything goes into it. And it the fact that it was affected so much by a decision like that is what drives you crazy.
Yeah, it's just completely mind-boggling. So with that, any of the color commentary that you're going to get from the three of us today, please take with a grain of salt, given the field conditions. We think that it played a large factor into what the Gophers attempted to do, maybe even what West Virginia attempted to do, right? I think at the end of the day, the Gophers won. I think that wasn't a surprise to most Gopher fans. They were a 4 or 5 point favorite at kick. They won 18-6. And on the day, at least from my vantage point, Derek, just to start the game, it looked like the idea was that they were going to open up the playbook and throw the ball. I can't remember exactly how many throws they started with, but they hit Daniel Jackson a couple times. Dalen Wright had a good start to the game. I thought this was going to be a throwing game, but then basically the turf monster overtook things, Derek.
Yeah, I think I agree with you that I got the sense that the Minnesota offensive coaching staff wanted to open up the playbook, particularly passing the ball. Some of the sets they ran early in the game, some of the schematics they ran early really gave me the sense that that's where they wanted to go. And I think, you know, ultimately that didn't happen for two reasons. One, you know, the field conditions, which I do think, especially in the second half, played a factor into the decision making and the play calling. But the second thing was just the way that West Virginia defense approached the game, which I'll just say it was very bizarre. You know, the conventional way to defend Minnesota at this point, given the game film and what they've done, is to try and load up to stop the run, slow Minnesota's running game down and force them to pass, you know, try and take away some RPO. And for whatever reason, West Virginia didn't do that. They chose to play an even box and even in a few situations ran a minus box, which is just wild to me, against Minnesota's running game. So what turned out to be maybe a little bit of an unfulfilling game for the Gopher offense. You know, you wanted to see more points. Maybe you wanted to see things open up a little bit more. When you combine those two things that happen, I don't really blame the offensive coaching staff for, especially in the second half, just really just grinding it out and you know, running over the West Virginia defense in the second half and just putting it away.
That was one of the most perplexing things that I saw as well. Now, it would make sense to me if Minnesota wasn't a running team, but anyone listening to this podcast knows Fleck loved to run the ball this year. That was their MO. And West Virginia literally just said, okay, yeah, we're going to go even negative one in the box at times. So yeah, when Tanner Morgan is trying to go play action, falls down, I think it was like second and 11, Tanner tries to go play action to Brevin Spanford and he falls down and it's third and 20 because sick field. You have Michael Brown Stevens fall down on a route and then keeps his hand underneath the ball. And that allows West Virginia to get an interception there. It just was clear that, I mean, Minnesota was the better team from the word go, and that Minnesota's defense wasn't going to allow anything. But West Virginia's, I'd love to know what Neil Brown and whoever West Virginia's defensive coordinator were thinking, because it was 6-6 or 6 or 7-7 a lot of the game. And I think anyone here listening to this knows, if Minnesota's got a strength of their offense, it's Kokeef, it's Brevin Spanford, and it's the offensive line. And they just said, yeah, you know what? Go for it. Yeah, that's why Minnesota's able to run 9 minutes off the clock in the fourth quarter before kneeling it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, Derek, I cannot figure out for the life of me. I tell you right now, if I was a West Virginia fan and I saw the way that they were essentially daring Minnesota to run the ball with what they were doing in the boxes, I would be having a lot of hard looks in the mirror about what in the world was the actual game plan from the Fighting John Denver's defensive coordinator.
Okay, so looking at the Gophers rushing, they went for 51 carries for 249 yards, and Ryan, as you mentioned, Tanner Morgan ended up being minus 15, but a lot of that was, you know, two sacks, and one of them wasn't really even a sack. He was successful in keeping the ball, which is something we should note. But the highlight of the game was obviously Daniel Fa'alele taking the 2 yard plunge into the end zone for the touchdown, getting a big man touchdown. So, Derek, from your perspective, as a former Gopher offensive lineman, how rewarding was that to watch Daniel dive into the end zone and, you know, bring basically his rugby-esque background into the game and push the pile forward to eventually punch in the score?
Well, that was fun. That was certainly not something that many offensive linemen get a chance to do, and I liked it. You know, you're that close, you're right on the goal line. Who's gonna stop that? You know, I only feel bad for some of those guys in the interior in the offensive line who Daniel ran into the back of. You know, those guys might be a little bit sore after the game, but it was a fun wrinkle. And I mean, just overall, you know, given all the things we've said, even taking into account West Virginia being a little light in the box, excellent day for the Gopher offensive line blocking on the run. In that front seven in the box, West Virginia really tried to move around a lot. They showed a lot of 3- and 4-man fronts. They did a lot of stunting, twisting. You know, they've watched their film. They know that at times that Gopher offensive line has struggled with movement. Wasn't the case in the bowl game. The offensive line did an excellent job. Also thought, in addition to, you know, Kokeef doing his usual outstanding job of blocking, I thought it was maybe Brevin Spanford's best blocking game as a tight end. He's been a little bit up and down when it comes to run blocking, and I thought he had a really good game. So hats off to those guys. Daniel Fa'alele, one of his top games blocking on the offensive line, and that came up huge for him in the second half because, as Ryan mentioned, the ability to hold on to the ball and grind out yards and you know, gash him a little bit here and there ultimately was the difference. West Virginia could not match up.
So, Ryan, well, Luke, I do want to get this in before you comment. I do think we have to note that that
I called the Daniel Fa'alele fullback dive. Well, thank you, Luke. No, I'm well aware of that, but go on.
You didn't. I was going to mention, you know,
hold your phone there, big guy. Are you saying I didn't? Because I think I went on Fox 9 and said, yeah, I'd love to see, you know some creativity.
You're literally so like prominent in like the media now. I can't even keep up. How could I even see all this? Like, I didn't watch Fox 9.
Thanks for supporting me as your podcast partner, Luke. Makes love. Yeah, I know. Makes me feel really good, bud. Anyways, you were saying.
Okay, so on the day, Kai Thomas, 21 carries, 144 yards, 19 carries for Bucky Irving, 129 yards. You know, that's kind of the balance we'd like to see at running back. The one thing I wanted to bring up from our live event, Ryan, Kenny Burns absolutely jinxed Kai Thomas on that fumble. Like 100% jinxed him. So for those of you that were not there at our live event, couldn't make it, We had an opportunity to interview Kenny Burns, and he said the thing that he was most proud of was the fact that the running back room did not have a fumble all season, and then Kai Thomas fumbled. Man, if I could have given him, like, if I could have messaged him on the sideline, I wonder if he was thinking, he's like, oh, man, I totally jinxed this group.
Well, I tell you, I can maybe confirm that somebody familiar with Kenny Burns is thinking may have sent a text message to a certain face for radio type of media member and said, I absolutely jinxed it and I knew it the moment it happened. So, yes, I think Kenny Burns is well aware that he may have jinxed it. But man, I was just so happy that they actually went through with the Falele fullback dive thing. You know, I'd heard they had been practicing it all week. And unfortunately, that's the play that John Michael Schmitz got injured on. And number one, first of all, congratulations to John Michael Schmitz because he got engaged while he was in Phoenix and he joins the member group of myself, Tanner Morgan, Jack Gibbons, and now himself, as I guess we're now old enough. And now I feel incredibly old that Gopher football players are now getting engaged while I'm covering them. But how fun was that? I mean, that's what bowl games are about to me.
Yes.
When it's the guaranteed rate freaking bowl.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't the Rose Bowl. This isn't, you know, the Fiesta Bowl or whatever you want to call it. I mean, the kickoff is 9:15 Central. It's getting weird after dark. You're playing a 6-6 football team that looked like a 6-6 football team. Mm-hmm. Get weird, have some fun, because even on the next play, they put Brock Anikstead as the holder. Rob Wenger gets his creativity out and they get a 2-point conversion. Tried to go with a flea flicker. Good. Have fun with this.
Yes.
That's the whole point of these bowl games. It's an exhibition game. Yeah, it helps when you win them. Now Minnesota's got 9 wins in their back pocket for Fleck to take on the recruiting trail, but I was just excited that they got a little bit creative. Now, I know that, you know, the ideally for Minnesota going into this game, from what I'd been told, they wanted to have Tanner throw 25, 30 times. But I think it became – here's what I'll say. Two things that we've already talked about. The field conditions were obviously not great. They tried to get Tanner on the move, tried to get him moving, and he slips and falls, and it's 3rd and 20. You have Brown Stevens fall down. Yeah, wasn't the greatest of balls, but it also doesn't help that Brown Stevens didn't keep his feet and then had his hand underneath the ball so the West Virginia guy could intercept it. And then number two, I mean, they were daring Matt Simon to run all night. So you know what he did? He ran the ball all night, and then Kai Thomas wins MVP with 21 carries for 144 yards, that long 50-yarder that he tried to kick it into third gear, couldn't quite get there, you know, which allowed Daniel Fale to that wasn't the Daniel Fale that won. I think he ended up punching it on the next drive, but he also had Bucky Irving with 129 yards and 19 carries. Both guys essentially run for a very nice 6.9 yards per carry. And that's what it's supposed to look like, folks. When you have your two running backs go 40 carries for, I think, let me do the math here, that's like 100. Yards. Oh, yeah, 271 yards. Why would you not run the ball if you're averaging damn near 7 yards a carry all night from your two running backs? This doesn't have to be rocket science. Do I want to see them throw the ball more? Yeah, I like watching guys like Chris Ottman-Bell and Dalen Wright catch passes. I really do. But I also understand that if West Virginia is daring you to run it, you are up 2 scores for most of the game. The field conditions are an absolute abomination. It just kind of is what it is, Luke. So if they're just going to dare you to run and the field conditions aren't going to be incredibly conducive when you do try to pass, then yeah, I think Fleck's going to go and say, yep, we're going to play this very smartly. And we're going to walk away with a 2-touchdown victory.
Yeah, just to close out on the passing, Tanner Morgan, 8 of 13, 109 yards, 8.4 average with 1 interception. I think maybe the highlight for me, 2 things in this game. One, Dalen Wright. You know, he flashes the athleticism that he has, Derek, right? And then additionally, yep. How they were able to get Derek LeCaptain a touch. Man, a guy that was playing defense to start the year in special teams coming in was monumental in that Wisconsin game in blitz pickups, etc. And then they got him another touch with an 11-yard reception on the day. So for me, those were the two real bright spots in the passing game.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about Dalen Wright. I've been asked about him, Ryan, you probably have as well, quite a bit. Why isn't he seeing more action? What's going on there? And I'll just echo what I think has already been said, which is that Dalen Wright is perhaps has the highest ceiling of anybody, not only in the wide receiver room, but maybe on the offense. He's incredibly athletic. He has very high potential, but what he needs to do is learn the reads and the routes depending on what the defense is doing. You can tell by the way he lines up and what he's doing post-snap that it's not completely there for him yet. So what I see is the staff right now putting him in a position to make his reads simpler, so that he's running patterns against in certain down and distances that make it a little simpler. Because where you need to get to is, you know, if he's, I'll just give you an example. If he's a split receiver and he's running a deep cross, you know, one of those clearing routes we talk about where you have the slot or the tight end try and clear the safety and you run a deep cross, the way that you run that route is very different depending on how the defense plays you. Obviously, it's going to be different whether you're running against man-to-man or zone. But even beyond that, the way that the safeties react to the route's interior will change the depth and the way in which you run that route. And that's the type of stuff that Dalen has to click for him. Because you can go out there and put a guy at split receiver and say, look, you're running across. But the way he's going to run that is it could be four different types of route depending on the way the defense is running it. So I just wanted to get that out there because I've been asked about it, Ryan. You've probably been asked about it. Very high ceiling. I think the guy has a really bright future. You saw some of those things in the bowl game. When he is able to get loose and run the right route in the right way, he's going to be tough to defend, and that was good to see.
There's not a player that I get asked about more and have not been asked about more in the last 3 weeks than Dalen Wright, because everyone sees it. The talent and the physical skill set are tantalizing. And I asked Chris Ottman Bell about it. Again, he sees him every day. He works with him every day. And I wrote about it on Gopher Illustrated, and I just want to get this quote out there. So here's what Chris said. I think with Dalen, it's all about mindset and knowing what he can do on every play. He's a super skillful player. And, again, this is Chris Ottman Bell saying this, and he's played with Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman. He makes the following statement. I don't think I've ever seen anyone with his body type or the way he's played. To have Dalen's body and athleticism, I would die for. And I tell him every single day that he could really be the best player out here and the best player to ever leave here. Now, again, I think we all would agree Dalen is incredibly physically talented. But here's how Ottman Bell ended the quote. Here's what I would tell him. If you could just put your mind to it and get your mindset right and work every day, you can be like one of the greatest. And I tell him that all the time. And I think for him, it's just about getting his mindset right and training his mind before his athletic ability. Now, again, you have Matt Simon, his position coach, calling the game. So, yes, you know, I think he only played, according to Pro Football Focus, 5 snaps. Now, I don't know if he was injured or what the game plan was, but I'm just telling you. We all see it. We all know Dalen Wright could be literally one of the best to play here. And I can assure you from then talking with Chris Ottman Bell again when I was in Phoenix, that's going to be his number one priority this offseason, along with improving himself coming back for a 6th year. And that's where Chris had even told me, I go, how far has Dalen come even since he's been here? He goes, leaps and bounds, quote unquote. But he goes, you know, and I'm paraphrasing at this point because I don't have the quotes in front of me, but you know, he's still got a long way to go, and we're going to work with him every single day to try and get there, because I think Chris knows if they can get Dalen to gain the coach's trust that he can play 40, 50, 60 snaps a game, they're going to have to rotate coverage his way. And that means Chris is going to be more open. Chris is going to get more balls. So we all know the talent is there, but for Dalen, it's an absolute, there may not be an offseason for a Golden Gopher football player that people are going to be watching more than Dalen Wright, and I understandably definitely understand why.
All right, so let's talk about when the Gophers were on defense. On the day, they only give up 6 points. West Virginia only possessed the ball 21 minutes and 31 seconds. They only amassed 206 yards of total offense, 140 through the air and 66 on the ground for a 2.4 yard average. They did have an interception that Flip Dixon picked off. Again, this is just a spectacular effort. Did the field conditions play into this somewhat? Yeah, sure. Was the fact that they were missing their top running back? Sure. But I was pretty impressed with Mathis Jr. I'll say this. This defense has improved more than any defense I have ever witnessed at Minnesota one season to the next, and this is just another this is just more evidence to prove that. Kudos to Joe Rossi and his team as they were able to put arguably the best defense in what, Derek, maybe the last 20 years on the field at Minnesota. Like this is just kind of the icing or the cherry on top for this defense and what they were able to accomplish.
Yeah, I think you have to go back to the late 90s, early 2000s. So, yeah, I think it's fair to say 20 years. And, you know, in terms of the defensive performance in the bowl game, this was the game plan or the game calling, the aggressive game calling that we had been waiting for. We had Ryan and I had hinted several times at the way that Minnesota had played, particularly with their safeties, was a bit conservative. I'm not knocking that. That was a good strategy. They wanted to keep everything in front of them. This was the game where they got the safeties a lot more involved. They got a lot more aggressive, particularly on passing down and distances. So much like we thought the offensive game plan would be a little bit more wide open, a little bit more fun, take some more chances. We definitely saw that on defense, and the Gophers were rewarded for that. You know, West Virginia really wanted to try and have four or five eligible receivers out on every play. I think they didn't feel that the Gophers could match up with four or five guys out in routes. They really used a lot of wide splits, tried to spread the field out. But the problem became, you know, I think the Gophers secondary rose to the challenge, number one. But number two is that left only five blockers. And frankly, the Gophers defensive line, West Virginia couldn't block them. So, yeah, it's a great idea and a great scheme to get guys out in space and say, we're just going to send five guys out on patterns every play. But, okay, well, then you have to block the defensive line. And the Gophers' defensive line was incredible. You know, they overmatched the West Virginia blocking. So it was really fun and rewarding as a Gopher fan that's watched, as you mentioned, Luke, not only the progression from last season, but has watched this year and say, boy, the defense looks awfully good, but there's still meat on the bone. I think this was the game and the game plan and the game calling in particular that they did go all out. So excellent job overall.
Well, they did have a month to prepare. They may have also had a couple of tidbits from Kirk Shiraka. I can't confirm nor deny that. No, I would tell you Neil Brown, West Virginia's coach, was a little salty after the game because he thought maybe they had been given a heads up on some of the player availabilities of who was playing and who wasn't. Neil, that's what happens. Number one, when the opposing team hires someone from your team, they probably know a few things. And number two, you did release a player availability sheet about 90 minutes before the game. So they could have seen that maybe some guys weren't going to be available and then adjust the game plan. But how about the Senior Bowl guys, Aboye Mafe and Asezio Tomiwu? They could have opted out, decided not to. I think between the two of them, Derek, they had 10 pressures and 8 hurries and 3 sacks. They were awesome. I mean, they were just abusing some of these tackles, and I'm glad for them that they got to go out on a high note. We also saw Ja Joyner get some more reps during this game so folks can see what life after says he's going to look like, and he was able to get a sack. You saw, I mean, you mentioned the safeties, Derek. I thought Jordan Howden played his absolute – he played fantastic. Mm-hmm. Now, he missed some tackles, which is uncharacteristic to the 2021 version of Jordan Howden, but he was fantastic in coverage. Absolutely fantastic. I think he had 3 passes defended, all in key spots. You had the defensive game MVP there, and Tyler Newbin leads the team in tackles. He's able to come up the A-gap there and absolutely crunch Jared Daigie. But to your point, Derek, I mean, West Virginia's offense couldn't run the ball. Now, I think some West Virginia fans would yell at me and say, well, what do you mean? Our running backs ran it for 18 carries for 91 yards. Yeah, that's great, especially when 15 of those yards came on the final play of the game. That's fantastic for you. I'm very happy for you. But they stopped the run. They got pressure with stunts and twists and creativity. I mean, on the Michael Dixon interception, you saw Jack Gibbons and Braylon Oliver do a little stunt up front. They're able to get pressure on him, and it's a wounded duck, and Michael Dixon playing center field is able to get his first career interception. Can't say enough about the job that Joe Rossi has done this year, much to the chagrin of Luke Buehr, who continues to text me off the podcast and say this is an aberration. I'm just joking, folks. So he has come around in his ways. He has come around. But I mean, it has to leave you feeling excited about the future, knowing that Joe Rossi's now locked up for the next couple of years. He's very happy here at Minnesota. Now, obviously, they have some pieces to replace up front with Asezi and Boye and Niles and Micah. amongst others on that defensive line leaving. That was the last time we'll see Jack Gibbons, and what an addition he was for that Gopher defense as well. And then Derek, I forget if it was you or Luke that had been asking all season, you know, teams really haven't been throwing at Coney Durr. And we finally saw a team on back-to-back plays and a very interesting fourth down play call, considering it was the exact same play they ran the play before. Third and fourth down, they say, let's go fade along the sidelines and test Coney Durr. How did that go? Two pass breakups. So was happy for that kid in his final game as a Golden Gopher that he hadn't been thrown at really all season. And then he finally gets tested in the bowl game and he rises to the occasion, Derek.
Yeah, that was we did talk about that. I think when we mentioned the all Big Ten teams and I think what I think was a big omission, not having Coney somewhere on those teams. And we talked about the fact that when you're press corner, if you're doing a good job, you're just not going to see any targets. You're not going to get a lot of PBUs. You're not going to get a lot of INTs when you're playing press corner, especially if you're doing your job, because they're not going to throw it at you. And yeah, West Virginia tried it in the bowl game, and you could see why other teams don't throw at him. Good technique, good skill, you know, was on the whole time, played the ball well, got his head around. And, you know, just on a personal note, I'm going to miss seeing him play. He was a kid that I always thought had the right attitude, played through injuries, came back from serious injuries, coaching changes, all of that. He kept his head down. He always worked hard. You know, some, his comments were always such that, you know, he wanted to play. He wanted to play more. You know, going through the pandemic and having to miss games, you know, bummed him out. And I really liked that. I liked watching him play. I always thought he was a great player, but I always thought he had the right attitude too. So it was, I want to, you know, just mention that as a little tribute to him. That personally, I loved watching him play, and you know, congratulations on a great career.
I want to mention too, like, you know, this is a West Virginia team that I tried to look up a little bit before the bowl game, and we saw a lot of, you know, whether it was bubble screens or kind of the outside screen action with the receivers, and Coney Durr was pretty influential early and just blowing those up, and we really didn't see them even try that. I think obviously the field conditions impacted that as well. The other thing that I want to highlight, a couple things. One, you know, Jack Gibbons made a huge contribution to this, and we saw the very best of Marion this year, probably. You know, he had a lot to take on this last year, and similar to, you know, the jump that we saw Jordan Howden make from 2018 to 2019, I think we saw a similar jump from Marion. And, you know, it might be a function of the fact that there are a bunch of guys around him and there is better play around him. He was able to focus and do his job, but improve there. And another player I just want to highlight quick. You remember when we first started this podcast and how high I was on Philip Howard as a wide receiver, Ryan? And then he absolutely just got lit up time and time again. He switched to the defensive side of the ball in playing special teams and made himself a serviceable defensive back. I think he had two interceptions on his career. You know, kudos to him, a local kid out of Robbinsdale. I was just really impressed that he, you know, didn't give up, switched to the defensive side of the ball and made himself a contributor, whether it was on punt coverage or, you know, spot duty in the secondary. Just mad kudos to that guy, given everything he had to go through with all the concussions early on. Ryan, you got anything else to close out defense for us?
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about the whole screen thing, because they did try a couple of screens early. And then Neil Brown was actually asked about it after the game, and he talked about how they had a very good defensive game plan and kept us off balance, and that they just, the looks that Minnesota was giving them, it was like they knew the screens were coming. Which, yes, Neil, you don't have to blame Kirk Shiraka for that one. If you watch a West Virginia game, maybe Minnesota had an additional few weeks to prepare for what looks they thought they were going to see and what formations that they were going to be running screens out of, and that Minnesota was prepared for it. So, I mean, it was just every level of the defense, Luke. I mean, that's how you hold a team to 206 total yards. It would have been under 200 if you take out that final play of the game. You're able to get off the field on third down, and just like it had been all season, it was every level of the defense doing their part. It was the defensive line setting the edge and stopping the run. It was them also getting after the passer. It was the linebackers tackling well in space. It was Jordan Howden and Tyler Newbin on their season of redemption, which, what a season for them. in 2021 compared to 2020. It's probably one of the reasons why Joe Harris-Simiak is going to be very much sought after again. And then you had Justin Wally and Cody Dur play well. It's a complete, even Bishop McDonald. I got to shout out the Oakdale product.
Yeah, he had a good
what
game.
Was. Yeah, and again, we saw him come on in the final few weeks of the season. Now, I don't believe he can. I think he's finally out of eligibility. I transferred in from UMD a handful of years ago now, but he punches out that ball, and if Cody Dur can just scoop it up, that's a huge turnover in that game as well. So it's every level of the defense, and that's what we saw from a Joe Rossi defense throughout the entire season. It's not just one guy. It's every level.
All right, let's talk a little bit of special teams and then maybe kind of talk about the season as a whole before we get out of here on our last episode for this 2021 season. So special teams wise, we talked about the 2-point conversion already. That was an awesome play. Great to see Anikstead get the 2-point conversion. I was confused. I was watching the game, the first game I watched this season with my dad, and he was like, "Why is Anikstead the holder?" And then, boy, that should have really tipped everything off. Great to see there. Trickett was 1-for-2 on the day. I can't remember. Mark Crawford was okay. I can't remember exactly. I think all ended up inside the 20, all three of his punts, but I thought he had an all right day. But I just wanted to get to something, Derek, that you had brought up recently about special teams. Being maybe high on some of these guys, they're playing special teams, that might be a good foundation for the defense coming in. And someone that I thought about that for a while, and I've rewatched a couple of the games, since the season ended, and someone that I'm kind of high on, and Ryan, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I've been impressed with Jalen Glaze on special teams. He blew up a play, the reverse, didn't fall for it. I'm maybe high on him coming into the 2022 season.
I mean, Derek, how long have we talked about on this podcast that we've seen how many guys over the years that's where they get their start and then they actually become pretty good players on defense? I mean, you think about the Cedric Thompsons and the Julian
Thomas
Huff,
Barber.
Blake Cashman's, and that's where Jalen Glaze has finally seemed to found his stride there. I mean, I know that the whole bit with me is just ripping special teams, but their coverage units all year were absolutely fantastic. It played a huge part of why Minnesota was one of the top field position teams in the entire country, is when teams did attempt a kick return or a punt return, it didn't go anywhere. And that's where we saw two kick returns attempted against Minnesota. And I think Minnesota gained 10 yards of field position both times on those. That's massive, especially going against West Virginia's offense that had been struggling to move the ball. When you have a coverage unit like Minnesota does, and it was Jalen Glaze, Bishop McDonald, Donald Willis, amongst others there that were playing a huge part in that, but it's a weapon for you. And I hope that Minnesota can continue to use that in their arsenal as being able to flip the field. But Luke, it's something to where I hope that is the case, because yes, Minnesota's bringing in a couple of transfer corners and Ryan Stapp is going to help on the outside. And then the first team all conference USA nickel guy, in one of your favorite names, Beanie Bishop. He'll also be here in January, but it's the young guys on special teams is where they get their start. And that's where I'm hoping that for Jalen Glaze, it's where he's going to start to contribute here, potentially sooner than later.
Any guys, Derek, that maybe stuck out for you this year on special teams, that you're not that you like, you and I don't have any inside information, right? But any guys that kind of stuck out, maybe just watching coverage units or whatnot?
If you hadn't have said it, I would definitely would have mentioned Jalen Glaze. I think he would be a number one. Donald Willis is another guy that I think flashed a number of times and was again, like Ryan said, you hope that, okay, is this the beginning of a Blake Cashman or one of those defensive guys that sort of gets their start flashing on special teams. That's how they get their playing time early, and that transitions into the normal 11 on defense. So I would say Donald Willis is another guy. And I think he, Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, got it flashed a couple of times in just standard defense in the bowl game as well. So I think they had on a couple blitz packages. And so I would look for those two guys, you know, if you're, and again, just to kind of reiterate here, that's something if you're a deep Gopher fan and want to, you know, get in really, you know, into the next level is keep an eye on those coverage units. I think that's a way that, that you might be able to tell who the next good defensive standout, they may get their start there.
All right. Let's, you want to touch anything else, Ryan? Otherwise I'm going to transition us again to the 2021 season as a whole.
I would just say I thought it was very apropos that you know, they missed the chippy field goal early on
and made the long
and then Trickett just says screw everyone and he makes a 49 yarder yeah. A distance that he had struggled from. I think he was 1 of 4 from 49 plus coming into the game, and he's like, yeah, easy peasy on that one. Yeah, and he misses the chippy. So
he's back, right? I think.
Yes, Matthew Trickett will be back for one final season. He'll get another season of Mark Crawford.
What about Kesich?
Kesich will be back.
And he deserves some credit,
Mark Crawford has a 44 average with 3 inside the 20. Kudos to the Australian for showing improvement this year. But yes, I mean, you get everybody on special teams back outside of the return. Well, I don't know if Brock Anixed will be back, but I don't know that I'm going to miss him as a punt returner. I'm going to be honest with you. Or just Minnesota's return game in general. But that's where, if we're looking for one area where special teams can make a leap, how about in the return game? And that's where, you know, hopefully you can, whether it's Kristen Hoskins maybe making an impact as a true freshman. I'd mentioned that the Beanie Bishop kid that they got from Western Kentucky, that'll be here in a few weeks. He was second team. He was a second team return man in the Conference USA, pro football focused. So he's expected to help there as well. You know, or if maybe it's one of the running backs being able to help if they're not getting a bunch of time. But the return game for Minnesota, if you want to continue to help you in field position margin, you have to have something resembling a return game and not just waving mm-hmm. away the punt, or not just, you know, if you do have an opportunity where maybe it's kick short to maybe the 10-yard line, be able to do something with it. So that's one area I'm hoping that Minnesota takes a step forward with next year.
All right, so let's take a look at this 21 season as a whole. The Gophers end the season 9-4. They are 6-3 in the conference. You know, the national media loves to basically focus on that loss to Bowling Green, and we're not trying to overlook that. And frankly, maybe don't focus enough on the loss to Illinois. But then, you know, the Gophers were able to pull out what I would say maybe not upset wins, but, you know, wins that could have gone either way at Purdue and then home against Wisconsin. You know, Iowa's another one that they maybe could have won. But all in all, it's hard for me to not look at this season, Derek, as I texted you, you know, even with all the injuries they had, and injuries are part of football, to both be optimistic and disappointed. And I think that's a good thing in part mm-hmm. because we're looking at 9-4 and being somewhat disappointed and saying, you know, this is a season what could have been with arguably the best defense we've seen in the last 20 years. And that's kudos to PJ Fleck and his staff and what they've been able to accomplish. Like, the expectation for someone like me and you, some of us diehard fans, are much higher than they were previously. You know, I know that people like to joke and say that, hey, PJ's got the Gophers back to 9-4, the record, you know, they had when he came in. But the reality of the situation is he also has had a 7-2 Big Ten record and a 6-3 Big Ten record in the past three seasons. He is, you know, he's 21-22 in Big Ten play with a 2-7 and a 3-6 record in Big Ten play. Like, he has elevated the expectations. Now the question is going to be going forward, can he sustain this? And I think all in all, I think having even an ounce of disappointment in this season is kudos to that staff.
Yeah, I think that you said it well. At 9-4, the fact that this partially feels like an unfulfilled season, you know, that they didn't get everything they could have gotten, that says a lot. I've been a Gopher fan a long time, and there's been a lot of seasons where you're trying to get to that bowl game, or you're trying to produce a winning record. You're trying to climb out of a bad situation. So, again, the fact that expectations have been raised, that they win nine games. They get a win at home against Wisconsin, and we're still talking about the fact that there were a couple they probably could or arguably should have gotten. That says a lot. And I don't think that's wrong, you know, and that's where, the program is headed in that direction. I think, you know, looking ahead a little bit, I think the two things that sit the best with me are that PJ Fleck was able to look at it, what is, I think, a successful season, and it is a successful season, but still be able to identify that the team didn't throw the ball as well as they could have offensively. There was definitely some meat on the bone, and he made a change at the coaching staff position. I think, again, the fact that he was able to recognize and make that change, I think that gives me a lot of hope, and that's a big takeaway. The other thing that I think is the biggest positive for me is just looking at the depth of talent that's been built on the roster. I think that's been the biggest change, and I think that gives me the biggest hope going forward. And what I mean by that is, I think that myself included, I think fans tend to look at, when you look at recruiting and you look at names and who's going to play, you want to look for the big flashy standout guy. You want to, who's your next Antoine Winfield? Who's your next Rashad Bateman? And that's fine. You obviously want to look for that, but I think this year's team proved that if you can build that depth of talent, where you're good everywhere, where you don't have a lot of holes, that can produce really good teams as well. And I think that puts you in a really good position going forward. You know, if you look at a team like, for example, Purdue, they've been able to grab some big names. I mean, they've had NFL guys on their team, but they hasn't translated into as many wins. And I think it's because they haven't built the depth of talent around them. So those are two things I think that give me a lot of hope going forward, a lot of excitement, you know, again, as a fan looking forward to next year. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, as always, how things end up in recruiting and how we do going into next season.
Well, here's what I'd say. So this was the second time in 3 years that Minnesota's won nine or more football games.
Can we put a disclaimer on the nine wins thing? Like, that's a pretty recent thing. So, like, people are throwing out the, like, you know, the Gophers only had nine wins in like 100 years. Like, hold on, we didn't even play nine games like a while back. I'm glad you said like in the past 3 years, because
no. Let me go back and see how long they've been playing double digit games, because Luke Buehler is the Grinch that stole Christmas.
I'm such a Grinch.
Holy, you are such a Grinch. Good golly, man. So the point I was trying to make, 9th 10-win season in program history, and they've done it 2 of the last 3 years.
Yes.
I think we could argue two things. Number one, it's great for the program. Number two, there's still meat on the bone. They had ample opportunities to be able to win the West in both of those seasons, and it didn't happen. Yet the floor continues to be raised for this program. And I understand that there's a lot of listeners and a lot of people on Gopher Illustrated that maybe more recent fans and don't understand the struggle of Gopher football before, say, the year 2015.
Yeah, welcome to our plight.
They were horrible or mediocre. And, Derek, I mean, no shade towards your playing time.
Speak the truth. That's okay.
Yeah, I mean, they were very mediocre for a large portion of my life. They were very mediocre for a large portion of many of the people listening to this lives. And I still think there's a ceiling to be had yet. And that's where you look at coming back with 22, you get Kirk Shiraka here, and you have Tanner Morgan and Mo Ibrahim and Kai Thomas and Bucky Irving and Chris Ottman-Bell and Dalen Wright and Brevin Spanford. It's going to be about the offensive line. And that's where there's a lot of unknowns about them. And I know that some people want to make some statements about, you know, what they saw from them in 2019 when fans last saw go for football practice, but like, they're older. Ariante Ursary, last time we saw him, Derek was oogling and ogling about his performance and against Nebraska and his lone start as a true freshman. He's had a couple years now to get ready for his opportunity as a year three starter at left, or a year three player at left tackle, and he's expected to be your starter. You'll have Axel Rushmeyer as a six-year guy. You'll have Nathan Bowe as a fifth-year guy. You'll have... I'm trying to think. So, you also have John Michael Schmitz, who's coming back to try and win the damn Remington, which, oh, by the way, maybe Derek knows a thing about it too, a thing or two about a guy that may have won the Remington back in the day. And then you'll have J.J. Gaudet as a fourth-year guy. Yes, they're looking to add offensive line depth in the portal still. I can assure you I know that, and I can assure you I'm covering that on Gopher Illustrated, but let's not act like these are a bunch of first- and second-year guys that are about to step in, Derek.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. This is your area, Ryan. It's certainly not my area of expertise, but if I can provide one, you know, comment here. I do the same thing as a fan. You look at the end of the season, you start looking forward to the next season, and you go position group by position group, and you say, where are we losing guys? Who do we have to fill them in? And I just got to say, taking helmet schools out of this, so you take your Ohio States, your Georgias, your Alabamas, take those out of it, because the majority of teams are not on that level, and it's a different game for those guys recruiting and personnel-wise. So if you take those out of it, when you add the transfer portal into the mix and players changing teams and such, I think this is every team. Every team and every fan base is going to go through this. Who are we going to have to fill in at, you know, at left guard next year? Who are we going to have to fill in at this position? There's a lot of unknowns because, again, most teams, you're not going to be in a position in college football to say, we're graduating out these four starters or these eight starters or whatever across the 22. And yep, here's the eight guys that are going to walk in tomorrow and start. And we feel good about it. I mean, again, unless you're talking about a helmet school, everybody's going through this. So don't let that discourage you, you know, and you know, is it tough to replace good players? Absolutely. But, you know, don't let the unknown scare you. These are college athletes. These are 18, 19 year olds that are going to come in and fill those shoes next year. And they're going to get better every year. And, you know, the cream will rise to the top. And with the portal, that can work in your advantage as well. So to me, none of this surprises me that there are holes and people are getting a little bit of anxiety on, are we going to take a step back in this position group, what have you. This is normal, I think, in today's college football.
Well, I would tell you it's beautiful to me because there's no longer apathy in this market resembling with Gopher football.
Great point.
For a large point of my life, there has been so many casual football fans in this market that have been so apathetic towards just the Gopher football team. Well, they've won 9 games plus the last 2 seasons. There's a lot more people that care. I know that. And I enjoy it. Again, it's not always pretty, as I can tell you from, you know, I went down in Phoenix to the Soda Social and I met with a lot of you guys and I was very appreciative to have a beverage with you, but this is a fan base that's traveling well now. This is a fan base that has 10,000 people at Colorado. This is a fan base that I think it was probably, you know, I was asking one of the bowl officials as I was walking out of the stadium at 2:30 in the morning. I go, what do you think it was for attendance? And he goes, oh, easily 65, 35 Minnesota, 70, 30 Minnesota. And now that's X number of bowl games in a row where Minnesota travels well.
Let's not overlook the fact that this is a packed student section too, right? We've talked about that a lot. Like
even the students, yes, people are buying into go football in this market, and that's tough because you're competing with 4 other sports teams that are in the pro market. It's tough to do, and we're seeing more and more buy-in, and I think that's the encouraging part to me. Now, again, if you want to go the flip side of the coin, yeah, it sucks that if Nebraska would have just held off Iowa, who had a 2-score lead at home, that Minnesota would have been in Indianapolis. It sucks. It also sucks in 2019 that you had an opportunity to win the Axe and win the West at home on national television, and you didn't take it, you know, advantage of that. But that's the beauty of college football, that there's always next season. And that's where even defensively, I think the secondary is probably going to be the strength of that unit. You have Jordan Howden in year 4 as a starter. Tyler Newbin, year 3 as a starter. Justin Wally, a Pro Football Focus All-American as a true freshman and the freshman there. You're bringing in 2 all-conference players in Ryan Stapp and Beanie Bishop there to shore things up. You still have Mariano Sorimarin there. Braylon Oliver in the last month has played his best few games of football in his career. You still have Cody Lindenberg, Donald Willis, our second cousin Jaquandus Burns. And then it becomes how do they figure it out on the defensive line because they're losing so many. And that's where, again, I would tell you they're looking for help at defensive end in the portal. They're looking for help at defensive tackle in the portal. But I also think we should mention, when Minnesota has taken someone from the portal, look at the last few years. Yeah. And look how many hits they have. Mm-hmm. You know, St. Juice, Chris Williamson, Jack Gibbons, Niles Pinckney, Dalen Wright. I'm trying to think of the other ones off the top. Micah Dutredway was even a transfer. These guys help. I mean, they're not taking guys, and, you know, a majority of them are flaming out. So that's even where we look at the schedule next year, and there is no shortage of storylines to start off your season as Jerry Kill comes into the Huntington Bank Stadium on Thursday night, and then you have Colorado. It's Mike Sanford versus Joe Rossi. I know Luke Buehr is already salivating and rubbing his palms together. He's excited about that. You have Iowa at home to end September. Minnesota's at home every single week they play in September. So that's where I'm hoping that folks are going to come out and see it while it's still warm. But yes, I mean, I think the overwhelming theme I'd leave you with is there's a lot to be excited about this team. I mean, it's to a place now where I hope we can. I mean, here's how you know it's going well, by the way. Do you know who wrote a positive thing today about the Gopher football program? A certain Star Tribune analyst.
Columnist?
Columnist, I should say. I kid you
there
not.
There aren't that many. Okay, go ahead.
Here's the headline as it loads on my computer. Patrick Royce, of all people, wrote the following statement. Sustained success raises Fleck above Holt.
I read that article.
I understand. There's some backhandedness in there, but I get it.
That's his job. He's an excellent, like, for whatever the narratives have been to people that
Royce
like him,
and Suhan and even and, yes, Royce and Suhan and Lavelle are just there for clicks and interactions and for you to care about them. But that's where, again, if you want to listen to a Star Tribune columnist, I'm incredibly biased, but Chip Scoggins is the best out there. But there's opportunity for this team next year with all they have returning. Mm-hmm. They're at home like 6 of the first 7 weeks, and then they're on the road for 4 of the final 5. It gets very difficult as it gets colder, but I still think this is a team now where you look at the Big Ten West, and from what we saw this year, would you guys agree, it's not about the Jimmies and Joes anymore. Minnesota's in the same tier as them. It's about getting over the hump against Iowa. You've won 2 of the last 4 against Wisconsin. And if you want to win the West, it has to go through them. Now, obviously, the thing I'm most excited about to never speak of again, because I'm so damn tired of it, Luke, is what?
It's two words,
it's a football team in Ohio.
Oh, Bowling Green.
I am so ready to be done with Bowling Green because it had no impact on Minnesota winning the West whatsoever. It was an abomination, but if you don't lose that game, you probably don't lose Mike Sanford, and I think the offense is now in a better place going into the future.
Yeah, I do want to just kind of my closing thoughts maybe on the season, and Derek, you kind of touched on this. You know, Fleck has often taken some heat for the introductory press conference comment that he eats hard conversations for breakfast. I don't know if you guys remember that, which I laughed at that too, but the reality of the situation is he has let go Rob Smith, someone he hired who was a good friend, because it needed to happen. And frankly speaking, I think without that Bowling Green game, I'm not sure that Sanford's gone. Because, you know, they're a 10-win team. You know, you can write whatever narrative you want, but I'm not necessarily convinced. But again, another person he hired, he's able to look at it and look at the situation and say, hey, we need to make a change here. And thus far, I have been impressed with his ability to look at situations that need addressing and largely address them, Derek.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is, you know, we said it when we found out about it at the time, which is this is Big Ten Power 5 football. You're going to be at your best as the CEO of this operation and PJ Fleck if you're looking completely objectively at the situation and trying to do what you feel is necessary to build a championship level program. And you're right, Luke, that really takes very difficult conversations and very difficult decisions. And it kind of goes back to what we're talking about here, is 8-4 regular season good enough? For PJ Fleck, I'm sure he would tell you no. He doesn't want a fan base whose expectations get ahead of him. Certainly that's a tough place to be in if you're a coach, but he is, I really believe he is trying to build a championship. He is not happy with 8-4. Yeah. And so he looks at it and says, boy, we're awfully good on defense. We're running the ball like crazy, but we're not good enough passing the ball. And maybe with some of the schemes and play calling, we can do better there. And so he makes the change. And what could arguably be the one area that, or the foremost area to make that change to have the most impact.
I'll just say this too. People often say that and Royce said this in his column, that PJ is maybe not quite the salesman that Brewster was or whatever, but he sells. But I do like the he's very particular in the language that he picks. And I liked after the Penn State game, this will stick with me for a long time. He said, this is what we can become. He didn't say this is what we are going to become, etc. He recognizes the fact that it's not just he and his staff. It needs to be the state of Minnesota and the fan base and the high school coaches and everybody. But this is what we can become. And we've had some moments like this, the win over Auburn, the win at Wisconsin, the win home against Wisconsin, etc. It's about sustainability at this point. And he's not wrong. It's something that Minnesota can become. It can become a championship caliber program. It's taking some time. And I think that they're on the right track.
And it's very difficult. I mean, it's damn hard to get to that level. People have to recognize that, if you're an armchair fan and maybe you're not a diehard Gopher fan and you watch a little bit of this team and a little bit of that team, I'm sure you're saying, okay, well, when is it the Gophers' time? When are they going to, this is college football. You have to build a 100-player roster. You have to get things right off the field. You have to deal with recruiting. And so I want to acknowledge that too. It just doesn't, you're right, Luke, it doesn't happen overnight and it's tough. Look around the Big Ten and look at what the other institutions you're competing with have in terms of resources and a head start and brands and things like that. And so it's not easy.
I'd also tell you, to your point about the offense and wanting to make changes, and that's where I can assure you they don't want to be the three service academies in the Minnesota for passing attempts. It's the way it ended up this year. It's the way it was in the bowl game. From talking with some people down there, and that's why part of the reason I go down early is I'm able to have some conversations with some people around the program. I've heard a lot of 2018 and 2019 offense vibes where they want to be throwing the ball. Yes, they're still going to run the ball quite a bit. Even you go back to Tanner's magical season of 30 touchdowns, I think they still ran it 60% of the time, but it's being able to conceptually within the passing game, be able to get things back on track to utilize the talents of Brevin Spanford, Chris Hopman-Bell, Dalen Wright, Michael Brown Stevens, Daniel Jackson, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a gigantic part of why Kirk Shiraka is now here. And that's his number one task. He's well aware of it, I can assure you, is fix the passing game because they know they have three backs. You can argue more than that with Kai Thomas and Bucky Irving. And then it becomes a little bit of an unknown. I know that there are people that are optimistic that Trey Potts returns. I would tell you this was the first time he has been with the team since Purdue. It's been 8-10 weeks now, I think, since that Purdue game. So there is a long road ahead of Trey Potts if he's going to be playing football again, and I'm sure he's going to attack it head on. I just don't share the same optimism that some others do that he's going to be playing football again. I would also tell you there's now no one that is a bigger Mo Ibrahim oboe. I mean, the dude is fantastic, arguably one of the best running backs in the program's history, but I also don't think we can deny how Achilles tears are absolute career enders for a lot of running backs. Now, I don't doubt that Mo Ibrahim is going to rehab harder than anybody in that program to come back from that. But to assume that he's going to be anywhere close to what we saw when we saw him last is a gigantic question mark to me. And I'm not ready to go there yet. Now, I'm sure we'll find out in the fall. But again, if you look at the history of running backs and Achilles injuries, it's not great. And then you have Bryce Williams coming off an injury as well. But I think the point is you still have a lot of pieces. It's just about fixing the passing game. And that's the whole reason why Shrock is back. He knows the staff. He knows Tanner. He knows how he operates, knows his thought process. knows a lot of the personnel, and is going to get to know Brevin Spanford now in year 4 or 5 compared to what he was in year 1, 2. But if they can fix the passing game and Rossi can figure it out on his defensive line and Callahan can earn his keep there on the offensive line with 4 brand new starters, I mean, this could be a lot of fun next year.
Yeah. I think, just want to thank everybody for listening. We had a very strong year in terms of download and listens. We appreciate everyone listening.
What are we at now for total listens?
I don't have a clue.
Give me five seconds.
Close to 800,000.
So, yeah, we're at 781,000 downloads on this podcast, and it's an eternity, which is insane to me. And as Luke was saying, we cannot thank you enough. Just because the season ends as well, that doesn't mean my work ends on Gopher Illustrated. Welcome to transfer portal season. Welcome to, there's another signing day in about 5 weeks. Then it's spring ball, and then it's more recruiting. So just because this podcast ends doesn't mean Gopher Illustrated ends as well, Luke.
Yeah. Yeah. So thanks for listening. Keep an eye out on social media. If we do anything, we'd love to do something live again. But you know, we'll have to see how the pandemic plays out and all sorts of things, but, appreciate you all listening. Appreciate Derek joining us again. Thanks for listening, and go Gophers.